Hi, I'm Missy. I'm a DIY DJ, and you can be too. This is Listener Driven Radio, CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg.
The following is an encore presentation from CKUW's archives. Join us next week when the regular host will be back with a few new episodes of original programming.
Welcome to Square Wave on CKUW 95.9 FM. I am your host, Dustin Rogers, and today on the program, the treasured shoot-em-ups of Furoshi Iuchi. Yes, I'm talking about Radiant Silvergun and Ikaruga, two entries in what's sometimes referred to as the Stone-like series. As for composers, today's show is a bit of a two-for-one special because in addition to hearing music from Hiroshi Iuchi, I'm also playing Hitoshi Sakamoto. Why? Because he composed Radiant Silvergun, while Iuchi composed Ikaruga. I'm going to get into all that and much more over the next hour or so. Subscribe to the podcast. It's another episode of Square Wave on CKUW 95.9 FM. The song is called Butsudakai, and it was composed by Hiroshi Iuchi for his game, Ikaruga. Although a handful of other key individuals worked on Ikaruga, I call it Iuchi's game because he planned, prototyped, composed, and directed for the project, and he also contributed about 70% of the game's background visuals as well. Since its release at the very end of 2001, Ikaruga has received nearly universal acclaim. Without a doubt, it remains Iuchi's crowning achievement today. The gameplay loop is fantastic, the music he wrote for the game keeps players dialed in with its riveting intensity, sometimes punctuated by moments of calm that pair nicely with the occasional denouement in the action on the screen. Iuchi's music somehow never feels grating. In fact, it complements the game beautifully. I think this speaks to the clarity of Iuchi's vision as a game designer. And that's a trait that he displayed as far back as 1989, when Iuchi was just getting started in game development at his first job as an artist for Konami's arcade division. Fresh out of art school, Iuchi's role is essentially to draw sprites and create visual assets for upcoming games. He's assigned to a small team working on a game called Quarth, and that's a puzzle shooter hybrid arcade game of little note. But I do want to mention this game because on the surface, it seems to share some really interesting design philosophies which Iuchi would incorporate into his later work. You see, Iuchi's games, the ones he directed anyway, they get called puzzle games more than almost any other shoot 'em ups. And Quarth, the very first game that he worked on, was very much a puzzle shooter. It's essentially a cross between Tetris and Space Invaders, if you can imagine. And keen fans of Yuji's are quick to draw connections between Quarth and his later work, but this really isn't the case. In a 2021 entry on his website, Yuji says Quarth itself wasn't much of an inspiration for him. Rather, that he learned much about what he calls game theory from Quarth's director and programmer, somebody Yuji refers to as Wada-san. I believe that Wada-san's full name is Koichi Wada, who we know worked at Konami around this time. Wada-san may have also worked on Contra, Thundercross, Bucky O'Hare, and a couple of other arcade projects at Konami too, but I wasn't able to find much information on them, unfortunately. There is, however, one other influential game developer that Yuji would work with after Quarth, who would have a much greater impact on his life, and that's Masato Maegawa. These days, Maegawa is pretty famous as far as game designers go, but in the early 90s, he was also a bit of an up-and-comer at Konami. Maegawa contributed to many recognizable games from this era, including Castlevania IV and Contra III, but it was while working on games like The Simpsons and Bucky O'Hare at Konami's arcade division that Maegawa first came in contact with Hiroshi Yuji. Maegawa recognized that there was something special inside of Yuji and decided to invite the young artist to his now-famous coffee shop meetings to discuss ideas for a new game. These would turn out to be fateful meetings for Maegawa and Yuji, and ultimately lead to Maegawa taking the producer credit on Yuji's Ikaruga 10 years later. I will tell you how all that happens, and a lot more too, but for now, let's hear more of Yuji's incredible Ikaruga soundtrack. You're listening to Square Wave on CKUW 95.9 FM. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Square Wave on CKUW 95.9 FM. We just heard two songs composed by Hiroshi Iuchi for Ikaruga, which was released in arcades in December of 2001. Ikaruga was created by a five-person team that was led by Iuchi at the game development studio Treasure, where he was a founding member. If you're just joining the show this week, I last left Iuchi's story in the early 90s, about 10 years before Ikaruga would release, and he's just been introduced to Masato Maegawa while working at Konami. Apparently, Maegawa felt that he had had enough of working on the endless stream of sequels that had become Konami's bread and butter, and he invited Iuchi and many other key Konami staff to join in his coffee shop meetings where the group would discuss new ideas for games. The strongest concept that would emerge out of these meetings was a run-and-gun action game in the vein of Contra, and it would go on to be known to the world as Gunstar Heroes. This concept featured four different weapon types that could be combined to different effects, and it was something original, and the team really believed that it would be a hit, but when Maegawa pitched the idea to Konami, they were told that it wouldn't sell enough copies to justify development, especially when so many of the other games they were working on already had established franchises behind them. I think you can probably guess what happens next. Masato Maegawa, Hiroshi Iuchi, and about eight other employees at Konami, tired of being stifled by the company's profile and aversion to risk, decide to leave and found their own game company. Maegawa and his team chose to call this company Treasure, out of a desire to be a treasured developer in the industry, and on June 19th, 1992, Treasure was officially incorporated. The team's first order of business was to seek out a partnership with Sega. This was mainly because Treasure believed the Genesis/Mega Drive would be the best home for the games, and that they would have more freedom to explore new ideas than they had working within Konami. I'd love to tell you that Sega saw the potential in Treasure's run-and-gun game idea, but they really didn't. Instead, when Sega was approached with this, they countered the fledgling Treasure team with a chance to prove themselves on a more bankable title. Sega asked Maegawa and his team to develop a new game for the McDonald's fast food chain license that they had recently secured. Well, Treasure took this assignment, and they took it seriously. Maegawa himself apparently mandated that the game's development stay faithful to the McDonald's licensing and characters, if you can imagine. And you know what? This game, it would be called McDonald's Treasure Land Adventure, it would go on to be one of the better licensed titles of the era, and the second game Treasure would release. It's the second game because during the development of this McDonald's licensed property, Sega saw the writing on the wall here and they decided to greenlight Treasure's Gunstar Heroes concept. Hiroshi Iuchi and several other team members immediately switched onto the new project, which they spent about 10 months developing before it was released in 1993, with basically no marketing support and very little faith from the publisher. I actually read that Sega of Japan initially ordered something like 10,000 units for the entire country. It's a laughably small number in retrospect because Gunstar Heroes would go on to sell close to 300,000 units at retail worldwide. Sega was, of course, pleasantly surprised by this. Their confidence in the Treasure team had paid off, and as a show of appreciation, Treasure would develop several other excellent games for Sega's Genesis console during its lifetime. After a couple years of this, I imagine, Sega's arcade team got a little envious, and the story goes that they began asking Treasure to develop an arcade title for them. It took a little convincing, but Sega would eventually get their wish in the form of Radiant Silvergun. This was Iuchi's first game as a director and served as the template for much of his later work. But before I get there, let's hear two more tracks from Iuchi's outstanding Ikaruga score. You're listening to Square Wave on CKUW 95.9 FM. Welcome back to Square Wave on CKUW 95.9 FM. That song was composed by Hiroshi Iuchi for Ikaruga, the spiritual successor to Radiant Silver Gun, a game which, in many ways, set the stage for Ikaruga when it was released on the STV arcade board and Sega Saturn in 1998. For those just tuning into the show today, Radiant Silver Gun was born out of Sega's desire for Masato Megawa's Treasure Team to create an arcade game for them. Initially, when this request came down from Sega, Megawa was tepid toward the idea. He judged, somewhat correctly, that the market for arcade games was dwindling, especially for 2D titles. Despite this, however, when he brought the request to his team, those who had cut their teeth in the golden age of arcades were eager to take on the challenge. First among those interested in the arcade idea was Hiroshi Iuchi. By now, Iuchi was the longtime collaborator with Megawa, and Megawa trusted him implicitly to direct this project. When Iuchi heard from his team that they wanted to develop a shoot-'em-up-style game after Gradius or R-Type, he was very concerned. To Iuchi, shoot-'em-ups were a stagnant genre. They had new games that were coming out, but they only seemed to rehash the same core concepts over and over again. Iuchi thought to himself that if this was going to be his directorial debut, he wanted his team to do something different. In a 1998 interview on Radiant Silver Gun's development, Iuchi said, quote, "It feels like arcade developers are short on new ideas nowadays, especially with all the remakes and such that we've been seeing lately. It's always hard for new ideas to take hold. That's just the way of the world. But the bigger the company you work for, the harder it is for new game designs to get through," unquote. And Iuchi goes on to cite Parappa the Rapper as an example of a game that probably would have seemed like a big risk on paper, but when it released, the final product proved that there was space for new gameplay experiences and ended up bringing a wide range of gamers into the fold. I believe that this idea is at the core of what Iuchi sought to achieve with this game. Like with Gunstar Heroes 5 years earlier, Radiant Silver Gun was treasure at their finest. The title received universal high scores at review outlets. It was like an electric shock straight to the heart of a genre that had gone into cardiac arrest, and it featured a pulse-pounding orchestral soundtrack to match, but unlike its successor, Radiant Silver Gun would be composed by Hitoshi Sakamoto. Now, longtime listeners of the show and fans of video game music in general will recognize that name. Hitoshi Sakamoto is one of the most famous and prolific game composers of all time. In fact, I dedicated an entire episode to Sakamoto back in 2021, and if you'd like to check that out, every episode of Square Wave is available to stream for free anytime on your podcast network of choice. Anyways, Radiant Silver Gun is truly one of Sakamoto's seminal soundtracks. It fuses his familiar orchestral style with an intensity that perfectly matches this game, hinting at what Iuchi would compose for Ikaruga a few years on from this. I'm going to take a moment to show you what I mean. These are two tracks composed by Hitoshi Sakamoto for Radiant Silver Gun, Treasure's first arcade game, and Hiroshi Iuchi's directorial debut. You'll hear how they set the stage for the music of Ikaruga that we've been listening to so far this hour, and I'll be back with more Square Wave on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. Welcome back to Square Wave on CKW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. We just heard Return and Reminiscence, two songs composed by Hitoshi Sakamoto for Radiant Silver Gun. And Reminiscence also happens to be the perfect title for this segment because for the first time I'm playing music from a game I've already covered on the show. But since I'm focusing today on Hiroshi Iuchi's work, I want to share with you a quote from Sakamoto that I didn't mention on the previous episode. This is from a 2001 interview with Sakamoto and the now-defunct RocketBaby.net. They asked the composer for his thoughts on Hiroshi Iuchi, and Sakamoto said, quote, "Mr. Iuchi, the director of Radiant Silver Gun, has a clear vision for his productions, so his opinion is clear to understand. Normally it takes a lot of time for the game staff to reach an agreement, but Mr. Iuchi is different. He's really good at expressing himself. I felt we already shared the same vision. Treasure's people are so excited about making games, I was glad to find many friends there," unquote. What seems to be clear, at least to me from this quote, is that Iuchi knew what he wanted his game to sound like. No one can deny that Sakamoto's orchestral flair is present throughout the Radiant Silvergun score, but I believe that Iuchi was responsible for teasing this particular sound out of Sakamoto. This belief is further reinforced when you compare Sakamoto's compositions with Iuchi's. Radiant Silvergun and Ikaruga already share gameplay elements, they may even take place in the same universe, but the two soundtracks seem like echoes of one another. They even share a song title between them. So it should come as no surprise then to hear that Ikaruga originally began development under the working title Project RS2, literally Radiant Silvergun 2. But what it became was so much more. You see, what made Radiant Silvergun such a special entry in the pantheon of shoot-em-ups was its color alignment system. Every enemy was either red, blue, or yellow, and if the player destroyed three of the same type in a row, their chain score would increase. The longer the player maintained their chain, the higher their score became. This addition dramatically increased the game's replayability and gave skilled players another way to challenge themselves in a genre that was already defined by being tough as nails. Ikaruga, on the other hand, keeps the chain score system but cuts the triad of colors down to just two, black and white. The game brilliantly allows the player to flip between the polarities as well. While the player uses the black polarity, they can absorb weapon fire from similarly aligned enemies and damage their opposite numbers. But the inverse is true when they swap to the white polarity. This does seem like a step backward in complexity, but simplifying the polarity system and applying it to the player's ship gave Iuchi permission to make Ikaruga even more challenging than its predecessor. The developers could now literally fill the screen with weapon fire that would be guaranteed to destroy the player if they weren't using the right polarity. Nothing was safe unless the player was using the right polarity, and this often required them to switch between them on the fly. Ikaruga's refinement and implementation of the recipe laid out by Radiant Silvergun was nothing short of genius, and it's a big part of what makes the game so special even today. Let's pause for just a moment to hear the rest of Ikaruga's timeless soundtrack, which was composed by Hiroshi Iuchi, and when I return, the final chapter on his influential career and the end of his Stone-like series. You're listening to Square Wave on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. Welcome back to Square Wave on CKUW 95.9 FM. We just heard the songs Metempsychosis and The Stone-like, composed by Hiroshi Iuchi for his genre-defying game Ikaruga. When it released in December of 2001, Iuchi's Vision, which began life as a side project that he worked on in his off hours, sent ripples through the gaming landscape which are still being felt today. In fact, when the critically acclaimed game developer Yoko Taro sat down for an interview with Famitsu in 2018, he said Iuchi's ability to weave gameplay and music together on Ikaruga had a major impact on him. Quote, "Ikaruga influenced how I synchronize the game sequences with the music. Combining the two in a way that appeals to people's hearts is a difficult task. This sort of technique has been a hurdle for developers to overcome since the early days of gaming history, and I think Ikaruga is the first game to actually do it. Because up until then, BGMs were only split by different scenes in each stage. In that regard, I believe Ikaruga was a game changer in gaming history." Later, he continues, "Iuchi-san, the planner and director of Ikaruga, was also in charge of making the music. Thanks to this, the stage progress matches the music as well. That is one part of what makes Ikaruga amazing." Unquote. Yoko Taro is talking about what Iuchi calls a mountain and valley approach. Ikaruga has these moments where the action and music peaks, and it's really intense to keep up with, followed by calmer moments that have a more melancholic atmosphere, only to begin building up the tempo again. It's one of the lesser appreciated elements of Iuchi's Vision, but one that is still impacting game design today. Iuchi first mentions this in a 2002 interview with Shmupulations.com, which is also the first time I could find that Iuchi mentions his plans for a third game in this series, a successor to Ikaruga, and the final entry in his Stone-like shoot-'em-up trilogy. Iuchi doesn't say much about the yet-to-be-released title other than the one-word concept behind the game. You see, each of these titles has a theme that drives them. For Radiant Silvergun, it was World, for Ikaruga, it was Will, and for the third game, which we've since learned will be called Ubusuna, the word is Future. In retrospect, Future is an ironic choice for a game that began development 20 years ago, because, believe it or not, Iuchi is still working to complete this game. It's wild to think about this. Like, since the interview in 2002, Iuchi's directed the PlayStation 2 game Gradius V and 2012's Kokuga for the Nintendo 3DS. Iuchi also left Treasure in 2006 to join G-Rev, which he then left in 2013 to join M2. A year later, in 2014, Iuchi officially announced that Ubusuna would be a downloadable title for the PlayStation 4. Never happened. After this point, there isn't a whole lot to go on for a couple of years, but if you would go to Iuchi's website about once every 12 months, there would be a new post providing an honest update on the apparently still forthcoming Ubusuna. I was shocked last year when Iuchi shared a 17-minute trailer for the game's story, along with the new music that he composed for it. Today, I want to leave you with some of this music that Iuchi shared in this trailer, but first, I want to tell you a little-known detail that I found quite interesting. When Ikaruga's soundtrack was released on vinyl in 2020, it featured a message etched into its runout. When you read both sides, it says, "I will not die until I achieve something. Even though the ideal is high, I never give in." This is two-thirds of a proverb that appears on Ikaruga's startup screen, and it feels a bit like Iuchi's own philosophy, doesn't it? Even though the ideal is high, I never give in. I guess we'll find out if Ubusuna ever does get released. Maybe I'll do a show on it after 20 years. You're listening to Square Wave on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. Thank you for listening to today's episode of Square Wave. There were a ton of moving parts on the show today, multiple composers, multiple games, so many different names. I hope you were able to follow everything and it all made sense. If you missed anything, you can stream episodes of Square Wave anytime from the podcast app on your phone. Square Wave is written and hosted by me, Dustin Rogers. The show's theme was composed by Spaceman Fantastiques. Thanks again for listening, and stay tuned for Pages and many more great community radio programs on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg.
CKUW 95.9 FM, celebrating 25 years of incredible independent radio on the FM dial.
This is David Barsamyan, host and director of Alternative Radio. Established in 1986, the award-winning AR is dedicated to the founding principles of public broadcasting, which urge that programming serve as a forum for controversy and debate, be diverse, and provide a voice for groups that may otherwise be unheard. Tune in to Alternative Radio every Wednesday at 1 p.m. on CKUW 95.9 FM to hear from people like Arundhati Roy, David Suzuki, Vijay Prashad, Naomi Klein, Tariq Ali, and Angela Davis.
Are you passionate about skiing and looking for a way to give back this season? Join Canadian Adaptive Snow Sports and help us make a real impact by volunteering your time. From teaching adaptive skiing or snowboarding techniques to supporting our events, there's a role for everyone. Visit our website at www.cads.ski to learn more, volunteer, or make a donation.
The Dave Barber Cinematheque, from cult classics to documentaries, from experimental surrealism to captivating realism, you can find a seat and some popcorn at 100 Arthur Street. Check out their show listings, updated monthly, at DaveBarberCinematheque.com. Show your CKUW friends card and get member pricing for any regular screening.
Howdy, neighbor. We're doing it, finally.
What are you doing?
Recording a promo for this show.
What show?
Oh, it's called the Gashly Crumb Tinies.
What's that?
It's an alphabetic radio show.
Oh, neat! When's it on?
Oh, Sunday evenings from 9 to 10 p.m. on CKUW 95.9 FM.
Cool. I'll tune in.